from deep inside your radio.
Yeah, it starts deep inside, and it goes so many places. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm busting my buttons. Don't stand too close to the radio when that happens. To announce that this week the ever expanding LeShow Network has expanded one more time into Scandinavia. Think of it. No, go look it up if you can't think of it. As of this broadcast is being rebroadcast on Radio Sweden. Hello, Sweden. Is Garrison Keillor on Radio Sweden? Is he even on Radio Norway? The war is on, ladies and gentlemen. I spent one day in Stockholm about 11 years ago, and it's true what they say. You can't take your eye off them. Eyes off them. So hello to the young Swedish ladies and your men friends, too. It's okay. There's no threat here. I'm on the radio. This is a very special edition of LeShow. They're all special, as you know. Every single one is an extra special edition of LeShow. This is a special one coming from New Orleans, Louisiana. And I thought last week might be the last show, the last LeShow before the war. Now it's increasingly obvious that this week's LeShow is the last LeShow before the war. And hope, you look for hope in interesting places. It hides. You smoke it out. Do whatever you can to find it. And this week, hope inheres in this premise that the United States government is better at war than at diplomacy. I should say this program is being recorded a day before you hear it. So if anything, but nothing is really going to change before the big three meet in the Azores. So I feel confident. Oh, that's a dangerous thing to say. Ladies and gentlemen, if you watch the television yak shows, you know that one of the most played sets of commercials on the air right now is for United Parcel Service. And I'm sure they do a fine job. I'm not knocking the parceling or the service or the union, for that matter. But if you've noticed these commercials, you've noticed one thing about them. There is a slogan that pervades them that is a serious, serious head-scratcher. I know it was introduced as probably kind of a teaser, trying to make you go, oh, what's this about? What possible product could this be for? But when the mind goes in that direction, it goes, one would think, in a place that the United Parcel Service would definitely not want you to go. The slogan in question is, of course, what can Brown do for you? Now, ladies and gentlemen, when you start being teased in that direction, as I say, you go somewhere where it's really hard to get you back to the subject of United Parcel Service. On the other hand, as I say, hope inheres in strange places these days, and the good news about this slogan, what can Brown do for you, is that we appear to have found the one enterprise in American society, the advertising department of United Parcel Service, that can actually use more focus groups. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sunday papers. So
From the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, this is Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show from, as I say, New Orleans, where this week David Duke was sentenced to more than a year in prison and a $10,000 fine for bilking his supporters and cheating on his taxes. I think the cheating on the taxes was taken more seriously by the government than bilking his supporters, because, of course, his supporters are ex-Ku Klux Klansmen, just like David Duke himself. Duke had a... it's nickel-dime, really. But he was cheating. And the interesting thing about it is this now means that both of the candidates for governor of Louisiana in the 1992 election, David Duke, who lost the election, and Edwin Edwards, who won the election, as of about 30 days from now, both will be behind bars. So everything's normal in Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen. Both the candidates are behind bars. That's the fair way to do it. Update on the digital television revolution. KLKE TV in Albion, Nebraska, has gone dark. It had been granted two extensions by the Federal Communications Commission, but it said it could not afford the transition to digital television, estimated at $2 million. So Albion, Nebraska, loses television. That's all right, isn't it? Isn't that okay for Albion to not have TV? Excuse me, I went falsetto on you. So, as predicted here by Ralph the Talking Computer several weeks ago, the House of Representatives cafeteria, as you know, has renamed French Fries, Freedom Fies, and thing. This goes both ways, ladies and gentlemen. Not only is the United States having a backlash against the French, among other groups we can mention, and will shortly, but in the rest of the world, there's a backlash against McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and Coca-Cola. Anything with a foreign flavor, especially from the United States and the United Kingdom, is not on the agenda, according to a businessman in the Persian Gulf. And soft drinks challenging Coca-Cola and claiming solidarity with Muslim causes are multiplying. A Coke knockoff called Mecca-Cola was introduced in November. Two similar drinks were rolled out in France this year. Arab Cola, and my personal favorite, Muslim Up. Come on, Muslim Up, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, we knew that the real agenda of the Bush administration was regime change. We just didn't understand that they meant the regime in the United Kingdom. And now, it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Some good apologies this week, as would be fit the last week before war. U.S. Representative Marcy Kaptur, speaking to a packed room at an East Toledo VFW post this week, apologized to anyone hurt by comments she made comparing Osama bin Laden to American Revolutionary War figures. Oh, that's smart, Marcy. Miss Kaptur, Democrat of Toledo, briefly addressed the crowd of 45 people before sitting down to eat, so it's a pre-prandial apology. You've heard much about my earlier statements on terrorism, and I just wanted you to all know that due to the political nature of what happened with my original statements, if my remarks have hurt anyone, I'm sorry. She was referring to controversial comments printed in a Toledo Blade article on March 1st in which she compared al-Qaeda members to American revolutionaries. Quote, "One could say that Osama bin Laden and these non-nation-state fighters with religious purpose are very similar to those kind of atypical revolutionaries that helped to cast off the British crown," Ms. Kaptur said. She said later that it was meant to analogize the forces that motivate people to join a rebellion. She was attacked by Rush Limbaugh and Matt Drudge. Gee, big surprise. Imagine her surprise. Dateline Kabul, President Bush called Afghan President Hamid Karzai to apologize for the way he was treated in a meeting with members of a Senate committee late last month, according to Afghan officials. The call was initially described by a White House official as a conversation about progress in the war on terrorism, but it was actually to apologize for what Bush considered unfair grilling of Karzai at the gathering. Bush offered to make the apology public, but Karzai declined. Bush called to say he was really sorry about how things had gone in the Senate, and Karzai should not have been treated like that. Karzai was placed at a witness table looking up at senators, the usual layout for people summoned to testify at a hearing. There were several skeptical and hostile questions at cars I did not expect and had not prepared for. Dog ate his homework, apparently, too. Dateline Canada, there's always a good apology out of Canada. An Ontario Teachers Union apologized to the Education Minister Elizabeth Whitmer 24 hours after its irate members punched and jostled her following an address to their annual meeting. Hey, you know, teachers shouldn't punch and jostle. Even Canadian teachers. That's my... Governor Gray Davis became the latest governor to atone for the forced sterilization of patients, which was part of a selective breeding movement called eugenics. To the victims and their families of this past injustice, the people of California are deeply sorry for the suffering you endured over the years, Davis said. Four other states, Virginia, Oregon, North Carolina, and South Carolina, have issued apologies. And Representative Jim Moran, of course everybody knows about this, has apologized for the remarks that he made, which he says singled out the Jewish community regarding their support, their alleged support for the war in Iraq. I should not have singled out the Jewish community, Moran says, and regret giving any impression that its members are somehow responsible for the course of action being pursued by the administration or are somehow behind an impending war. Yet to apologize for similar remarks, of course, Pat Buchanan. Don't hold your breath, department. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the front page news in the Times-Picayune here in New Orleans. A petition is being circulated to change the name of the French Quarter to the Freedom Quarter. State Department Representative Richard Boucher asked whether he's making progress at the United Nations on that second resolution. I wouldn't deny we're making progress, but I don't want to mislead you into thinking that we've got it in the bag. We stayed fixated on the rule that you don't count your chickens till the cows come home. That makes the chickens harder to count, it would seem to me. The local dog trainer back in Southern California has gotten a classified State Department report casting doubt on the democracy domino theory, whereby several Bush administration advisors, including Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz, have argued that if only the Iraqi dictator were toppled, democracy would spread like a benign virus throughout the Middle East. The report exposes significant divisions within the Bush administration over the so-called democratic domino theory. The report has been distributed to a small group of top government officials, but not publicly disclosed. It says that daunting economic and social problems are likely to undermine basic stability in the Middle East for years to come. I don't know if it points this out, but okay, so let's say that they all get democratic and that every one of those countries then elects an Islamic fundamentalist regime democratically. What do we do then? As noted, Tony Blair is in trouble. He may not have made the case. The criticism is still being made that George W. Bush has not quite yet made the case. And of course, as earlier espoused on this broadcast, you know, we can have press conferences and speeches, but what might really help him make the case is music. And since Providence may be lending a hand in this war, music with a gospelacious touch.
He'll rain death from above till our boys get bored from the lack of booze. Like when like turns to love, when Bush comes to shove. Oh, international law, you're not the drink, you're just the straw. For a moment, it's your cover that we use. Oh, Germany and France started the old Europe dance, and Russia wasn't very far behind. Then Rumsfeld and Powell laid it on with a trowel, said the oil is there, you get your
Shoes have been removed, so we can begin this segment of the broadcast, which originates in New Orleans, Louisiana, where I've interviewed several piano players and singers, mainly piano players. And so for this segment, since I detest nothing so much as nepotism, I've conducted a nationwide talent search and for the interviewee to be featured on today's broadcast, and I'm pleased and proud to announce that the winner is my wife. How did that happen? Nationwide talent search, and I end up with my wife. This, there'll be an investigation, but in the meantime, Miss Judith Owen, hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Well, thank you so much. And it was a really hard talent search as well, and I had to do many things and jump through many, many loops. And some would say I actually had to sleep with some of the One of the judges.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
You also had to take your shoes off. It was your shoes that were
being
removed.
Those are my shoes that I removed because I can't play unless I'm barefooted. It's a primitive state that I've only just discovered that suits me, that that when I'm barefooted, I really do play much, much better and more animalistically.
Well, that's how primitive man played the piano.
Yes, it was, actually.
Barefoot.
Yes.
How did you come to the piano? I'm going to ask you some questions that I know the answer to. Because
and you won't mind if I don't stare at you while actually looking at you while you're asking the questions, because it's just, I just keep wanting to say, well, you know that. I've told you this so many times.
Well, I know, but it's like being on television. You're being interviewed by people who already know the answer.
Well, Mr. Shearer, and by the way, can I just say I'm a huge fan of all your work.
Oh, thank you so much.
I came to the piano as a very young child because I come from a very musical family. My father's an opera singer, and there was always music in the house, and we are Welsh, but we were living in London by then, just outside London. And there was always singing and music in the house, and my sister was learning to play the piano, and she was playing a piece of Debussy. And I was listening to it, and I walked up to the piano, and I was four, and I copied the piece. And so my parents thought I was going to be some uberkind and a fantastic concert pianist, which of course is what you might think would happen. But it turns out that I have absolutely no ability to read music or any interest other than hearing other magnificent pianists playing beautiful music. I really just love writing and singing, and that was really it. So I was a horrible brat when I was very young because I refused to do this and had a few lessons. And I remember one teacher called Miss Duck, which is always difficult.
Miss Duck?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was her. That was her actual.
Actual. Yes. And funnily enough, she had never been married, and very English, and great joy of learning to play the piano when somebody hits you on the back of the hand with a ruler every time you hit a wrong note or can't read. So I hated the whole thing. It was just revolting. So I was just left alone, and I wrote my little ditties.
You were writing little ditties as a child.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Do you remember what the first song you wrote was?
The first real song, and it's a kind of it's a little early in the interview to get dark and melancholy, but here we go. It's never too soon.
Too early. No.
It's never too early to go down that way. So the first real song I ever wrote was fairly soon after my mother died, and it turned from being little ditties where I'd be just loving chords and loving making little songs up, and the first song became just a very immediate change, and I started to write in an incredibly emotional and real way. It was a song that if I played it today, which I won't, because it's absolutely too depressing for words, even by my standards, was a real song, a real beauty. I could play it today, and it would still stand up.
Hmm. Why don't you play a song, not that song, but a song of a less melancholy nature, perhaps, just barely. Yeah, knowing your oeuvre.
Is that like my egg?
It is indeed.
Oh.
From maybe something from your new record, which
my new
coincidentally is coming out.
This is very strange, yeah. And at the same time, I should be doing this.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
How does that happen?
The record is actually a companion piece to this live shows that I've been doing. So they just the musicians I've been working with went into a studio for 3 days and just knocked them out, and they do sound quite lovely, I must say. And I should have, you're the host. You are the host, and this once I'm going to.
You're going to defer. We do have this on tape. Well, since you were rehearsing it right before we started recording, why don't you play Hey Days?
I will play Hey Days.
Tell a little bit about the song. Like, who's it about?
It's not about me, which is. it's about one of the reasons that I love and always dreamed about coming to America. Was fascinated with it because I'm a huge movie buff, and especially black and white films, and I watch nothing else but AMC and Turner Classics. So I mean, I just love it. And as you well know, because you question me on this constantly as to how I could possibly watch the same film 20 times and not be bored. But being in LA and meeting people who just wax lyrical and tell amazing stories about what I consider to be the heydays of the film business and of the music business in LA is just astounding to me. I just never tire of it. And this was somebody who I met, who in fact was Liberace's manager, who is the father of a very dear friend of mine. And his name was Seymour Heller, and he was just the most fantastic character in the world. And we met in Nate Nall's, which is a deli in Beverly Hills. And I was trying to question him about Liberace's
proclivities.
Thank you. And he was just the greatest kind of most noble and loyal person by just saying he was a prince amongst men, he was a prince amongst men, which he kept repeating all the time. And I was like, yes, well, I know he's a prince, but I mean, what about other princes? And what about the princess? And he would never spill the beans. He was just fantastic. And he just told me about Victor Mature, who had such an astounding appendage that when during the war they'd be going on the USO2s and stuff like that, and they'd be going from camp to camp, and so great was his appendage that he would be able to actually use it as some kind of bat, as like a baseball bat, and you could throw pieces of paper at him, flick them, and he would. So anyway, of course, that made me want to write a very deep and meaningful song.
I think the image is now fixed in our minds.
It's horrendous, isn't it?
We can now proceed to the actual song.
An Earl is a birth once regaled me with tales of her father, and showbiz old Hollywood, that was the life he had seen. I sat amazed as she told me of the days of her childhood, and could hardly wait till the time when she'd tell me again. And one day we met, we sat in an old Jewish deli, and he spoke of a young Liberace and spitballs with Victor Mature. And I laughed and I flirted with this old boy who never talked dirty, and the more I suggested, the more he stayed loyal and pure. So give me the old boys with stories to tell of the way this town was, the films that I love that I know so well. These were the heydays. When he died, 'cause it felt like the end of an era. The classiest guys were creating a exciting new world. And I thought of the pride in his voice as he spoke of his daughter, how his wife was the love of his life, and we called them his girls. So Elizabeth, please regale me with tales of your father. Showbiz or Hollywood, tell me the life that you knew. 'Cause you're cut from the cloth, you're a chip off the old block, my dear. And I'm glad that I knew him, and I'm so glad that I know you. So give me the old boys with stories to tell of the way this town was, the music I love that I know so well. These were the heydays. Give me the old boys with stories to tell of the way this town was, the films that I love that I know so well. These were the heydays. The heydays.
Judith Owen performing live for us in the New Orleans Le Show Dome. Heydays, it's on your record, yes, the new record?
Yes, it is.
Which is called Do the Job.
Oh, what? It's called 12 Arrows.
I've watched this process, and I have no understanding of it at all. So tell me, from your side of the equation, how does a song come to be for you?
Usually it's just, there's emotion in me about something. I go to the piano at some given time just because I feel the urge, because I hear something in my head, and I sit down, and it's usually out in about 10 to 15 minutes. Piano-wise, and usually what happens is the meaning of the song, what it's really about, is usually it's in the hook, it's in the chorus somewhere, and that line, lyrically, words, they come out straight away. They come out exactly the same time as the music does. So I know what it's about, and then it's a matter of just walking away and coming back to it a few times, and then just tightening things up and writing the lyrics to it. I have a great what's the word for it?
Husband?
No, that wasn't it. I have a real love of writing beautiful melody with twisted lyric.
Mm-hmm.
How's that?
Yeah.
And a husband.
But it does all.
I have to say that.
Yeah, it does seem to come out sort of quickly, suddenly, magically.
It's as if you look back on it. There are times when I look back on my songs and look back at the lyrics, and I actually, months later, sometimes a year later, sometimes years, and I actually understand what the hell I was writing about. It's amazing, because it doesn't feel like it's...
Doesn't really feel like something you did.
No, it doesn't at all, and I'm sure that's what people refer to as channeling. I just think it's the unconscious self. I think it's when you're in the most pure and zone-like place, when this stuff just comes out of you. It's a most exquisite feeling in the world when you write. For me, it really is.
Play something else from the new bunch of stuff, if you would.
Well, this, I think I'll do something which is has a little bit of a rhythmic quality to it, so that the whole show doesn't become like the hanky hour. Although that could mean something else too.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be fine. This is called On Me, and it's about people downloading their stuff on you.
Did I do bad, thinking that you might be a man? 'Cause you looked so strong, but you act so young. I guess that you don't understand anything. I guess that you just don't understand. And you told me of your story, how you love something finer than me. Well, you would not
God, no Christ, if you met in paradise. So darling, don't put the blame on me. On me. You have been hurt all of your life. Lord, I know that you've been neglected from birth. You're an unhappy man. Happy wife, unaware of your own lack of self-worth, unaware of your own lack of self-worth. And you told me of your stories, how you love something finer than me. Well, you would not know Christ if you met in paradise. So darling, don't put the blame on me. To live alone, an unhappy king in a country of one, governing ghosts from your throne. Governing ghosts from your throne. And you tell me of your story, how you love something finer than me. Well, you would not know Christ if you met in paradise. So darling, don't put the blame on me. And you tell me of your story, how you love something finer than me. And you would not know Christ if you met in paradise. So darling, don't put the blame on me.
Judith Owen on me. Excuse me? What? What did he say?
Are you having trouble with the knobs?
Always.
Oh.
You mentioned your father and your exposure to opera at an early age. What other musical influences can you trace? I mean, who else were you listening to growing up?
Well, my father is a pretty unusual classical musician because... Although he felt that opera was, you know, the be-all and end-all and really the most, you know, the highest level of singing that you could ever do, he was listening when he was a young boy to people like Nellie Lutcher and Jelly Roll Morton and Albert Ammons.
Mm.
And he was obsessed with stride piano and barrel house and all that kind of stuff. And he had these incredible 78s that he'd collected in Wales. How bizarre is that? When he was a really young child. Then he got in totally into R&B, and that was in there as well. But it was always piano. It was always about the piano and the voice. And so, funny enough, when I came to New Orleans for the first time, we'd been listening to the radio. He listened to the radio, and he called me and said, "You'll not believe this incredible person that I've just heard on the radio." And I recorded as much of it as I could. And I don't know the name of the person, and you've got to hear this. And he sent me a tape, and it was just blinding. And then when I came over here and went to New Orleans Jazz Fest for the first time, it there standing in front of me on a stage was Johnny Adams, and that was exactly who we'd been listening to years before. And then I got to see Nellie Lutcher when she came to play in L.A. at the grand age of about 85, I think.
Oh, you're younger than that. Oh, you mean Nellie Lutcher? I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I want to be 85 with a pair of gloves playing piano. I mean, that actually is what I want to be. And she was singing Fine Brown Frame and just as fabulously and flirtatiously as she always has. And then the first, I'd say, astounding influence apart from Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald, that I was, you know, I'm a Nelson Riddle lunatic, and I would listen to that stuff until my ears were bleeding. But truly the biggest influence upon me was Stevie Wonder. And when I first acquired Songs in the Key of Life, again, just wore the damn thing out. And he was the most exciting artist I'd ever heard, vocally, keyboard-wise. There just didn't seem to be any boundaries to this man. He just did absolutely whatever he thought sounded great. And that was what it was all about, and it was so inspiring. I've never quite got over him, and now that I've come here and seen him play live, and actually been in the ear, nose, and throat doctor's waiting room when he walked through, I just felt my life had actually been completely, you know, satisfied in every way possible.
Those are the real Hollywood thrills.
Those are the thrills
when you're sitting in the same doctor's office as your idols.
Yes, so him, Aretha Franklin, early Elton John, because it was just so unbelievably great. These are all people to me. I realized that everyone that's important, all the music that I listen to this day, are all piano playing singers. Randy Newman, early Aretha, just because the piano was so prominent, because she was a pianist, that was in her soul. That's what really, really just drives me crazy. And then I really thought about the classical music that I listen to all the time as well. And my probably up there is Rachmaninoff, and so there's no surprising that I'm obsessed with pianos. What can I say?
Mm-hmm. You want to hit the piano again?
Yes.
Indulge your obsession in it.
I'm going to indulge my obsession with the Celtic side of me.
Oh, yeah.
Because the part that I suppose influenced my soul the most was the utter melancholic state of Celtic people and of Welsh people in particular. One end to cry in their beers quite regularly. This is a song called Conway Bay.
There's a word in it that you should explain to the audience.
Yeah, the word is Candor Craig, and we went to Scotland, and Candor Craig was this castle, an astounding castle, and a town and a castle, and we were there, and I set off from this place on a road trip that followed my childhood across to the west coast, to the lochs, which I used to go to a lot when I was a kid, and I still feel are just some of the most spiritual places in the world are in Scotland, and then down into Wales, down into Conway Bay, which is where we used to holiday when I was a child, and then all the way down through Wales, which is pretty shocking, I think, because everything is the smallest roads you've ever seen in your entire life, so it takes forever to get through Wales, but it is exquisite. And down to where I'm from, and...
Say the name of the town you're from.
Llanelli.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, wipe off your radios, and here's Judith to sing.
I took the road from Candor Craig to the Western Isles, down into Conway Bay. I took the road through heathered hills, put my arms around the land that would haunt me still. I took the road from Candor Craig to the Irish Sea, down to my mother's grave. I took the road through childhood times and put my arms around girl who was always mine. And the bridges we burn, they make life so beautiful. They're the places we yearn for when we're so far away. Oh, those bridges we burn, they make life so beautiful. Childhood, sunny days, rainy days. So I took the road from Candor Craig to the Western Isles, down into Conway Bay. I took the road through Heather Hills, and at last I cried, ancient land, you own me still.
Judith Owen, Conway Bay, not on the new record, right?
No, on the next record.
On the next
record.
We
actually recorded it right here in New Orleans.
Cool.
Right here on this band.
The new record is out on your own label, and you can people who want to buy it can...
Yeah, you get it on Amazon and also on www.judithowen.net. And this is my real voice, by the way.
And why is it .net?
Oh, good grief. Now... Here's a weird thing. I have the most Welsh name, and apart from the Judith, but everything, you know, you call your children after biblical characters. Judith, Queen of the Jews, cut the head off, blah, blah, blah. And strong person. I'm very grateful for that name. And as it happened, judithowen.com had already gone because it is, in fact, or was the most fantastic Asian porn site. So very, you know, obviously Welsh, very kind of Welsh Asian. On site, but it that's why I had to have the net. That's exactly why. I went and checked it out. It was very, very educational.
But it's gone now?
It's gone.
Wow, the .com bust has...
Yes, I suppose so. And I don't see why I should change it back, but most people think of it as net at this point, so yeah. I don't know.
So what are your next projects after this record?
I'm now going to start the next record here in Party Studios in New Orleans.
And so, they're also doing a record of covers, right?
And the one I enjoy doing the most was Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden, because it's a fantastic song, and a lot of people, I don't think, would really maybe get into it just because it's so hardcore. It's just a great song. It's lyrically exquisite, and so I made it mine own.
Show us what you mean.
It would be my absolute pleasure. In my mind... Indisposed in disguise, as no one knows, hides the face and lies the snake, the sun in my disgrace. Boiling heat, a summer sweat beneath the sky, the earth looks red. Call my name, and through the cream, I hear you scream again. Yeah. Black hole sun, won't you come and wash away the rain? Black hole sun, won't you come, won't you come? Black hole sun, won't you come and wash away the rain? Black hole sun, won't you come, won't you come? Won't you come? Yeah, stuttering. Cold and damp, feel the warm, tired friend. Times are gone for honest men, and sometimes far too long for snakes. In my youth, boiling heat in my youth, I swear to keep getting sent a hell away, cause no one sings like you no more. No. Black old sun, won't you come and wash away the rain? Black old sun, won't you come, won't you come? Black old sun, won't you come and wash away the rain? Black old sun, won't you come, won't you come? Won't you come? Yeah. Black hole sun, won't you come and watch? wash away the rain. Black old sun, won't you come? Won't you come? Black old sun, won't you come? Wash away the rain. And won't you please? And won't you
no idea what that song's about, do you?
Yes, about taking drugs.
Oh, well, no wonder.
Where have you been? Well, I mean, either it's about PMS or about being in a really bad drug trip. But for me,
yeah,
I imagine myself with PMS while I sing it.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now I think you understand it better.
Now I understand it much better.
Yes.
More with Judith Owen momentarily. Ladies and gentlemen, on the eve of war, it's important to know what's getting emphasized by the major broadcast news organizations, and most particularly, how many tonights Tom Brokaw is using in a pre-war broadcast. The count continues.
Good evening. We've gone from showdown poker to 52 pickup, the kids game in which all the cards are on the floor and all the players are turning them over trying to find a winning hand. Tonight, the French vowed to veto any U.S. war resolution at the U.N., but tonight, as NBC Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Andrea Mitchell reports now, it is the calendar and demands that are dictating this debate. Thanks very much, NBC's Andrea Mitchell tonight. We have two reports tonight. There was one good piece of news for the Bush administration tonight. NBC George Lewis tonight from Ankara. Here's NBC Senior Investigative Correspondent Lisa Myers tonight. Up next, NBC News in Depth tonight, NBC's Robert Hager, new reporting on the loss of the space shuttle Columbia. Still ahead tonight, how a new generation at West Point is getting ready to fight a new kind of war. NBC News in Depth tonight, the latest on the investigation into the breakup of the space shuttle Columbia, and new indications tonight that the spaceship was in trouble earlier than the experts thought. Next, it was a gloomy day on Wall Street, and Lifeline tonight, the first drug that fights a very dangerous food allergy, peanuts. I'm Tom Brokaw. I'll see you back here tomorrow night.
Only 12 tonights, ladies and gentlemen. They're getting serious as war approaches. And he said peanuts. In New Orleans with Judith Owen, as we finish up this conversation, your goals are just to keep doing this, but to have more people become aware of it?
I love how it's amazing how you can ask these questions and sound so believable when you know, in fact, the answer to everything. And let me get professional. My goals in life are to absolutely be the best artist I can be and to keep doing what I do and not to be afraid of being different and unique. This is what I do, and I have to just work my fabulous behind off to just reach as many human beings as I can. So
world domination is the thing.
World domination completely.
Okay, so the record is called 12 Arrows.
It's called 12 Arrows. And I should just point out that there are two quite phenomenal duets on it that I'm very proud of. And one is, the whole point of the record was just to do, not to do multiple takes, not to do any of that stuff. I really am very bad at this. I believe in the Frank Sinatra, you know, it's the first will be your best, and it usually is, if I've bothered to learn the lyrics. And we added to that a couple of really, I thought, quite spectacular, again, just let's get together and do one take of a couple of duets. And Julia Fordham did the duet of That Scares Me. And the second second duet is with Richard Thompson. They are two remarkable artists.
Judith, people ask me this question all the time, so I'll ask it of you. What is it that you like so much about New Orleans?
Most of the world is really driven, I feel, by the guitar. And this place is absolutely still devoted to the piano. And there's some of the finest piano players in the world here. That was the first thing that hit me, of course, was the music. And the second thing that hit me or hit my stomach was the food. And then I managed to figure out how you actually eat the food without turning into a juggernaut.
Nicely done.
Thank you. We just found out what it means. Lord of the World. 16 Whirler Lord of the World. Carried Krishna. Something. So I would say music, food, absolutely architecture, and you can't say enough about how fabulous the people down here are, and how, you know, walking across the street takes 20 minutes because everybody wants to chat, and I want to chat too. And I love it. What's not to like about that?
Okay. That would be my list. favor us with another tune.
You know, oh, Noah's a good man. He was sitting up on top of his hill. And he said, "Dear fine feather, fair weather friends, listen to me. Won't you let me help you? 'Cause no one else will. Believe me, he, nothing lasts forever. So the good book says, nothing lasts forever. Get into your clothes. You can sleep when you're dead, you know. I had my share of worries, and I've lived under the clouds of fear. You can hold on to your sorrows, forget about your tomorrows, darling. It's funny how you want to live when you think the end is near. Listen to me, nothing lasts forever. So the good book says, nothing lasts forever. Get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead, you know. And every day you have is a lesson, and every smile's a friend you can lean on, and everyone you love is a blessing. The I sing the cake. You know, oh, Noah was a good man. He was sitting up on top of that hill, and he said, it's a bitter pill to swallow, but forget about your tomorrows, darling. The big man didn't get you, but you know one day he will. Listen to me, nothing lasts forever. So the good book says, nothing lasts forever. Get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead. Darling, well, da-da-da-da, don't you know nothing really lasts forever? Nothing lasts forever. Get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead. Get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead. Darling, get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead.
Yeah.
Well, that is going to put the feathered and beaded chapeau on this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on Radio Sweden in Sweden, on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, on WBCQ, the planet, shortwave, 7.415 megahertz, on Sirius satellite radio all across North America, and on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, www.harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it'd be just like being a war if you'd be ready to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. All the songs that you heard today by Judith are available on 12 Arrows, her new album on it's at Amazon and cdbaby.com. And Conway Bay is streamable. Downloadable and streamable from www.judithowen.net. My thanks to Bob Dunn. Sean Hurley played bass. And John and Drew at Piety Street Studios, the studios of the stars. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions, the Ridge Suited Facilities, the SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.